is Ron Frank from the Vietnam Archive, speaking on the phone with James O'Neill Richardson, who served on the USS Maynard, APA 201. It's February the 28th, year 2001, and I'm speaking with him at his home on the East Coast.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Richardson.
Yes, sir.
Hi, it's Ron Frankum.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
Well, not too good.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
All kind of things, yeah.
Is this not a good time to talk?
Not really.
Okay, well, can we reschedule, or would you like me to call you back later on in the week?
Probably so. I've been having trouble with my...
All right, well, then we can talk.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I have a couple questions.
Yes, sir.
About your time on the USS Maynard, mm-hmm. During the Operation Passage to Freedom. And I've been able to find out a little bit of information about the operation and the Maynard's participation, but I was really interested in some of your experiences and your memories and perspective.
Yes, sir.
At the time. I guess the first question I have, just for a little bit of background for myself, is I'm interested in when you got yourself into the USS Army and what role did you play on the Maynard at the time of the operation?
Well, I was service in the Navy, really, in the gunnery section.
Okay.
As a third class gunner's mate.
Okay. What year did you get into the military?
1951.
Okay.
And then we had, of course, the Korean conflict and this and that. And then after that was over with, the Vietnam era began to start.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the Maynard was one of the first ships over there for
this
operation.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Do you recall what the situation was like when you got over? Because you were one of the first ships over into the north into Haiphong.
Yes, sir. We were the first ship in Saigon.
Okay.
The French Navy people were still in that area, but they had secured their operations and through the UN by the United States had the amphibious fleet that I was in there at that time go in, you know.
Okay.
And,
when you first heard that you were going to be a part of this operation, did you know anything about what was going on in China at the time?
No, sir. I didn't know anything about Vietnam at all.
Okay.
So what happened, Doc, we were en route to Hong Kong for R&R for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And something happened on the ship. One of our shipmates jumped off, deported from the ship.
Okay.
So instead at night, and then we waited probably a couple of days trying to search around for him. And by that time, the Coast Guard was there, and they relieved of our duty. So then from there, we went to Saigon. And at that time, that's the only thing I knew about it. The first time anybody in the ship, I guess, knew about it.
Did they give you an indication of what you were going to be doing before you actually got into China? Or did you have any indication of what you were going to be doing?
I really couldn't tell you about that because I don't remember now about that. But I knew the people were going to have to be transported from the northern area in Vietnam to Saigon.
Okay.
That's about the only thing we really knew until we actually got there, as far as I know, and began the lift from north to south.
Okay. Do you recall how many trips the Maynard actually conducted for moving refugees from the north to the south?
Yes, sir. I don't really know, but I'm going to tell you. I'm going to say 2 to 4 trips back.
Round trips?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's my guess now. I'm sure it was more than one or two.
Yeah. Well, I'll be able to, when I get into the ship logs, I'll be able to get all the exact dates and everything.
Yes, sir.
But I was curious because of all the people I've talked to, I've never really had a chance to, or corresponded, I should say. You're the first person I've been able to talk to.
Well, I'm glad.
I'm curious to get an idea of the number of trips. Now, when you arrived in Haiphong up in the north, were you able to leave the ship at all, or were you required to stay on the ship?
No, sir. We were required to stay on the ship And at that time, I guess the Vietnamese or that would probably have to be the Vietnamese would transport the refugees from land site to the ocean where we were, which was probably 3 or 4 miles from the shore, you know.
Okay.
And at the ocean, that particular place, the reason they did that is because the rocks in the water was too dangerous to move around, you know.
So okay.
With the big ship, we stayed out probably 4 or 5 miles, and they brought them out on something like LCIs.
LCIs, or did they use LSTs as well?
LSTs, no, sir.
Okay.
Small, it's a little smaller ship.
Smaller ships, okay.
Yes, sir.
Were those, the French ships as well? Were those French crewed craft, do you know?
No, sir.
Those are American crewed craft.
I'm not sure about that, but I don't think so because the French had decided that they were going to leave. That's my opinion now.
Yeah, well, no, they were definitely on their way out.
Yes, sir.
No question of that.
That's right, and that's why they had the amphibious forces I was belong to go down to remove these people, you know.
Did you, or the Maynard, I should say,
yes, sir.
Did they move just refugees, or did they also move the French Foreign Legion?
No, we just refugees.
Just refugees.
Yes, sir, to my knowledge, that's what it was. And most of them, sir, was just kids, older ladies, and older men, you know. They were not able to be in the conflict at all.
So okay.
Too older depended on each other, you know. So.
Well, actually, I was going to ask you about from what you remember, the general condition of the refugees in the terms of their appearance or health or their wealth or emotion.
Yes, sir. They didn't have anything, really. And their health was kind of poor, too, because of the food and the things that they really had. So when they came aboard the ship, prior to this now, we had been in Saigon and received rice for their diet on the ship. And our cooks prepared the food the first meal, and after that they wouldn't have it because they didn't like it.
Okay.
So then we had through the priest that was on the ship, which was a Catholic fella, he got with the Vietnamese that were there and made a crew up to cook their rice with, you know, so they could really cook it the way they'd like.
Right.
And to my knowledge, about the only thing they had to eat was just rice, and they had something like a little pickle that they mashed on top of the rice, you know, juice-like.
Okay.
And this rice was probably in 200-pound bags or something like that. Out on the deck, we probably had 100 or so bags of rice, you know, to feed all these people on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what they ate. A friend of mine in Rockmore, Georgia, was on the ship also, and he was a cook at that time, so he knows more about that than I would really, about the galley situation, you know.
Were you ever, because when they did they fed the refugees, did they do that topside on the deck, or was that underneath?
You mean the rice?
When they actually did the feeding.
Oh, in feeding, they fed them in the galley when we got through, I believe. I'm sure about that.
Were you ever around when that occurred?
Oh, yeah. You could see them on the deck and everywhere, you know. Since I was on the gunnery section, I was basically on the top of the deck, you know, outside.
Okay. Did
and
you?
That's where a lot of them stayed, you know.
Yeah. I imagine it was also pretty warm at that time of the year, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And probably we had this is a guess now. We had 1,000 on at one time, maybe, or something like that.
Okay.
And
What was the normal capacity of the main art?
The capacity for troops was
for
around
troops.
2,000.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, sir. And we had boats on the ship to do the troops with, but we didn't use any boats of ours to bring the refugees out. Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Actually, going back to the refugees when they came aboard, did you get any sense of their own particular emotion, whether or not they were afraid or excited or things like that?
I really guess they were afraid because the North Vietnamese were really running everybody out, you know.
Okay.
That was at that time.
By any chance, did you speak French or?
Seek friends?
Speak French.
Oh, no, sir. No, okay. No, sir. We were friendly to them, and they were friendly to us, you know.
Mm-hmm. And how did you guys communicate?
Well, we didn't. We couldn't really do it much, you know. But they would really urine on the decks and things like this, you know, something they were not able to do or know about not doing it, you know.
Okay.
For health reasons.
I've heard that on some of the other ships, they had the same types of problems.
Yes, sir.
How did the crew of the Maynard try to overcome, you know, the things like the heads and scuttlebutts and
we tried to go along with the situation, you know, and I think everybody got along real good. So when we go back to Saigon with one ship's load, you know, they would debark and
mm-hmm.
go to a holding area around Saigon, and then they'd send them out on different places wherever they were going, you know, some places here and there, you know, and the ship after the crew was, the refugees were out, they would decontaminate the ship where they were staying, you know.
Okay.
And at that time, like I say, we could carry 2,000 Marines and we took care of all those down into below decks in the same way, you know. So it'd take 2 or 3 days to decontaminate the ship, and then we were back on track again for another troop.
Do you remember how long it took to get from north to south once you had everyone aboard?
Well, I put my notes down here. I'm just guessing three or four days. I'm not really,
okay.
I'm really not sure about that.
Well, that sounds about right.
It wasn't very far, you know. And our ship basically cruised probably 18 knots, something like that.
Okay. When that first batch of refugees got on, you said there were a lot of older people and children.
Yes, sir.
Did you, I know that certainly in the Navy, and a lot of pictures I've seen, that there's always that affinity towards the kids.
Yeah.
And the kids sort of brighten up, too, especially if you have candy or things of that nature.
Yeah, I think some of them did, and gave them soap and knew the different things we had, you know, at that time, maybe.
Did you find that, even beyond the normal packages that they received when they got off the ships, that sailors went down to the ship store and bought things for them or did things of that nature? Or did you do that?
No, I did not, but I think some of the fellas did now, maybe like a bar of soap or cigarettes or something like that, you know. We had a ship store on the ship there, and we could buy cigarettes and soaps, toothpaste, stuff like that. Of course, they didn't know anything about that, but soap, they would use that.
Yeah. At least to clean clothes and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
How about candy?
I don't know about any candy, no, sir.
Let's see. Now, after the first trip, I don't know if you remember, was any discussion on sort of changing the standard operating procedure for transporting the refugees? Or really, I guess what the question is, was there any sort of improvisation?
No, sir, not at all.
Sort of, you know, in terms of lessons learned?
Yes, right. It was, which we were used to, lots of troops on our ship, and we were accommodating that with these people, I guess, you know.
But essentially, as if you're transporting the same number of people, and you deal with them the same sort of way you would with normal troops. Is that pretty fair to say, or?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so. We would always accommodate the military when they came aboard, and we did the Vietnamese the same way, you know, basically.
When the Vietnamese were getting on board, did they go through any sort of delousing?
No.
Or maybe was that done perhaps before they actually got to the ship?
I don't really know. I really don't know, sir.
So I know they were deloused and cleaned up some, but I imagine that probably was done on shore.
They just, as far as I know, they just come aboard the ship, you know, and went to the places they were assigned to, I guess. And the priest could talk to his people, you know, that he had there with him, and I'm sure they were communicating back and forth to each other, you know.
Right. Was it really just then the one Catholic priest that was able to communicate through the language barrier?
I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, then he had Vietnamese that was there too, see.
Okay.
And they would kind of help him along with other things besides his priesthood.
Now, when I was talking to another gentleman on a different ship, one of the problems they faced in the feedings were what they first tried to do was distribute the rice to individuals, but they found that those individuals were hoarding the rice.
I didn't ever see anything like that.
That never really came across your view.
I didn't really see anything like that. Of course, they could have, but they ate the rice. I know. I think everybody got fed well with the rice, you know.
Well, what they ended up doing in this particular case is they just started doing the what you guys did from the beginning, the galley feedings.
Yes, sir.
And then they had two or three times a day they would
right.
do that.
Yes, sir. That's right.
Did you find at all the refugees, their attitudes changing at all towards the end of the trip, warming up to the soldiers that they had been with, the sailors?
Well, I imagine so, because they knew that we were friends, you know, so for that reason they just left the worn, torn area there where they lived, so I'm sure they enjoyed being on the ship, you know, with people that are friendly to them.
Yeah, and actually getting some good square meals.
Yes, sir.
As well.
Yeah. Like I say, though, the only thing to my knowledge now that I saw was just rice alone.
Okay. Yeah, because in some of the other ships they had sardines, which was sort of an interesting dietary plan.
Some of them did have sardines?
Yeah, sardines, yeah.
I don't know now. This could be a sardine thing that they would mash over that rice, you know, the juice.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume it was a pickle or something of that nature that would hold juices. And it was a real small thing, about the size of a pencil, only about 2 or 3 inches long. But I don't really know what they were, because that part of it I had no anything to know about it.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah, I never got close enough really to...
Well, I've seen them on deck, you know, and things like this, but that's about it.
Now, you said that the refugees disembarked in Saigon?
Yes, sir.
Were you able to get ashore and do some shore leave there? Or?
Oh yeah, yes sir.
What?
Yeah.
Tell me about what Saigon was like. I'm curious.
Saigon's a right big city. I've got a dog doing a lot of barking here.
Yeah.
Saigon is a right good city, and they had food out on the streets with the little restaurant chairs and tables, you know.
Okay.
They had lots of things to drink. Cognac, that's the first time I'd ever heard of that. And a lot of the bigger people that had the restaurants, a lot of them were something like Indians with turbans on their head, you know.
Okay.
And if we'd ever go to a bar, they would feed you something like chicken or fish or something like that free while you were drinking beer. And it was just a big city area there.
What, did you get a sense of what the people were like, or in terms of friendly towards sailors, or afraid of sailors, or
yeah, they were friendly.
Indifferent?
Yeah, they were friendly. I tell you, the first time I lost any of my uniform was in Saigon, and the guy went by with a bicycle and stole my hat off my head.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And then another one from Fort Worth, Texas, I mentioned the other day to you. We got in a taxi going back to the ship. And I got in the taxi first, and he got in second. The window down there, so as he got in, he had glasses on, and somebody on the street ran by and grabbed his glasses and went down an alley. We never did find them, so I had to lead this guy back to the ship to get his work glasses.
He's
a guy from Fort Worth.
Lucky he had another pair. Well, I guess that occurs just about in any city nowadays, doesn't it?
That's right. That sure does.
What other things do you remember about about Saigon at the time?
Well, the city was right there on the little channel, you know, like, and I talked to this fellow from Georgia the other day, and he said he remembered about the machine guns, I'd say, on the banks as we were going in the river to Saigon.
Okay.
Which was from the ocean to Saigon was probably, I'm going to say, 3 or 4 miles or maybe more than that, yet I don't really know, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
And we'd see nest of machine guns on the banks and things like this, you know. And at that time, they were having trouble with ships, too, I think. Now, I'm not sure about that.
Did you ever see any of the fighting? Because even at that point, the French were still doing a little bit of fighting with the Viet Minh. Did you ever come in contact with that?
No, sir. No. At that time, I don't think anybody was doing anything. Of course, they say 1964 is when the war began, but we had been there since 1954.
That's right, yeah. Even before that, really. So that was...
Excuse me?
I would say, yeah, even before 54, but 54 really was, I think, you know, you take all the ships, it was a pretty big operation.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It's hard not to include it in the history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, I made some notes of my own. And we left San Diego on February the 9th, 1954.
Mm-hmm.
Arrived in Yokosuka, Japan on March the 9th, 54.
Okay.
And we went returned back to Long Beach about October the 16th, 1954. So there's about 6 months there. That's the time that we were there, see. And I think the reason we were there because the Korean War ended prior to this.
That's right.
Yes, sir. So that's why we got called back over to assist in this, I'm sure. But we didn't know it because we were going to rest and recreation, see.
Right. And you were delayed quite a bit in that, weren't you? In terms of being able to go in your R&R.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we didn't even go to Hong Kong because of the guy jumping off the ship and going to Saigon.
Yeah.
They had a particular time to be there, see. I think they told us something like 3 or 4 days. I don't really remember that much, but.
Well, on the ship, as you were transporting the refugees, do you remember any of the, were there any births or deaths that occurred from the refugee population?
Not to my knowledge, no, sir. I don't know. I heard some of them said so now, but I never knew any.
Okay.
And I didn't work in the medical part there, so I had no reason to know about it, you know?
Yeah, I know. That makes sense.
And if something happened like that, they would not inform the crew of what happened, you know?
Okay.
And probably this guy, Don, is that the one that talked to you about it?
No, actually, this was based on a conversation I had with a gentleman on another ship.
Oh, on another ship.
Yeah, I'm not really sure if there were any births or deaths on the Maynard during this time.
Not to my knowledge, no.
Okay. How about any attempts by the Vietnamese communists to interfere with the mission?
Oh, no, not to my knowledge now, but I'm sure on the beach, they were leaving as soon as they could, you know, because they were killing so many people there, you know, at that time.
Yeah.
And they were trying to get the people out as soon as possible. So that's why when we got them out to Saigon, they put on a little concentration camp, I'd call it, and assigned them out, you know.
Okay. What do you mean? In Saigon?
Yes, sir.
They had
buses to pick them up or something like that, trucks.
Okay.
To carry them to this particular compound there.
Okay, yeah, I think that's what they called the welcoming center. And
yeah,
then they would
right.
They would disperse them throughout the countryside.
That's right. But the city of Saigon, it was a nice city. It was a big city there.
Did you have a chance to stop in Da Nang, or Da Nang as they call it now?
Da Nang, no, sir.
And the I guess they had a little R&R area there for some of the ships.
Da Nang, I did not know anything about her.
Okay. I guess at the time it was under the French name called Touraine.
Yes, sir.
Did you stop at Touraine?
No, sir.
Okay.
We stayed aboard the ship all the time, except when we bring the people into Saigon, they give us a couple of days off while they decontaminate the areas they were staying in.
Okay.
And then we'd head out the next time for another cruise, you know.
And do it all over again.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Were there any memorable events during the actual transportation of the refugees that you think back?
No, not really. No, sir, I don't know anything.
How about the general attitude of your shipmates in terms of the operation? Was there any talk really about why you guys were there or whether you thought you shouldn't be there or
no, not really.
Anything like that or maybe some pride in the fact that you were doing what you were doing?
No, sir, I didn't know of anything like that.
Okay.
In fact, we just knew that was our job, you know, our duty to. We had no complaints about that, you know.
Right. Or even, yeah, not even that necessarily a complaint, but even even the pride factor of it.
Yes, sir.
Were there any individuals that stood out in your mind that did exceptional work or?
No, I think the whole crew did, really, by accepting them, you know.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
I think that was because we didn't have that much time with them, you know, and nobody complained or said anything about them except they were not very sanitized areas where they were staying, you know, because of the toiletry situations and things like that. That's why they decontaminate the ship every time we come back into Saigon.
Right, why they had to do that.
Yes,
how about Dr. Dooley? Did you ever get a chance to come in contact with him?
Who was that?
Dr. Dooley, Thomas Dooley.
No, sir. Okay. Was he on the ship I was on?
Well, no, I think he was on the Montrell.
Oh, yeah. Montrell.
Montrell, yeah.
Yeah.
But he did go from, he did visit a lot of the ships to talk about the situation in the north.
No, sir. He was never on our ship, not to my knowledge, now.
Well, let me ask you, if you were to characterize the operation as a success or a failure, or, you know, if you were able to turn back the clock and were given a chance to do it all over again, would you? Would you do it all over again?
Oh, yeah, because it was something that the United Nations wanted the United States Navy to do. And that was our job, and we were just trying to save the lives of the people that were not able to save themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody was in that same situation. They were very successful by going along with everything.
Right. I think that's a pretty good assessment. How about again, personally, after you finished with the operation, did you ever follow the events that were occurring in South Vietnam in the 50s?
Oh, yeah.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, not really, but I'd look at it in paper and TV and things like that. And after we returned to Long Beach, California, when we did the operation, I went to San Diego and got discharged in February, so I came back to Wilmington in February of 55 and came back home here and went to work for the Army.
Okay. As a civilian or as?
As a civilian, yes.
Okay.
They're a civil service employee.
Okay.
And I worked there for 39 and a half years, and our terminal here, which was Sunny Point, is the outport for all military ammunition, Army, Navy, Air Force.
Okay. So you did follow the events that were going on in South Vietnam. Did you ever talk with anybody about the operation after it was over and after you were back and discharged?
No, sir. Not to my knowledge, unless it's some of my friends, you know,
Yeah.
That was on the ship with me, you know, but not really.
Well, really, I'm sort of towards the end of my questions, and usually one of the last ones I ask is if there are any sort of additional memories or stories or things that you want to include that I neglected or somehow missed.
No, I don't know of anything there, sir. I mean, it was all basically routine.
Yeah.
About it, as far as I know there.
Okay. Well, that's really, in terms of the questions I have, that's really about it. What I'm going to try to do this summer is get out to Washington and get a chance to get the deck logs.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
If I have, you know, once I do that and I'm able to read them, would it be okay if I have any additional questions to give you a call again? And,
oh, yes.
And then maybe
sir.
We can set up to talk a little more if there's something specific that I might find that, with hopes that you guys could help clarify it for me.
Yeah, well, that's good. I'll sure do that. I will. Okay. I'll be glad to help you.
And certainly if there's anything, you know, after we hang up, you say, gosh darn it, I wish I had told him about that. please, you know, let me know and, we can set up another thing here so I can call you and we can talk a little more.
That's what I did last night. I wrote these two sheets out here and I said, well, maybe I can, think about the things when he asked me, you know.
Well, was there anything on the sheets that we didn't cover?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't know of anything really.
Okay. Well, you know, as I've told everyone, you know, even those little things that you might not think are important
mm-hmm.
could make a pretty interesting story.
Yes, sir.
So again, at any time, just let me know, and we can set up another time where we can talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's only for a few minutes, that's fine with me.
Yes, sir. Do you have Richard Bell?
Richard Bell
from Georgia.
No, that name is not familiar.
He was on the ship. He was a cook when I was on the ship there.
Okay.
And he. Friends.
Okay.
And if you'd want to call him at his work, why?
Well, do you think he'd be interested in talking about the experiences some?
Well, I think so, probably, and I think he would probably be interested in telling you about the galley and the food situation better than I could, you know.
And actually, that's something I'd be interested in learning a little more about, because to feed that many people in, you know, a dish that they normally don't serve on ships,
yes, sir.
I'd be curious to see what kind of things he was able to do.
You'd like me to give you his telephone number?
Sure, yeah, if you think it's okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
And
it's Rockmart, Georgia. Richard Bell.
Richard Bell.
Yeah, he mentioned to me about those guns, and then at that time I remembered it, you know, so it's
okay.
Always something when you get two or three.
Well, that's right, yeah. That's the neat thing is I have the opportunity to speak to I think quite a few guys who served on the Manhart. So
have you?
Yeah, well, I will. You're actually the first.
Yeah.
You're the first one, but I've I've got a couple more scheduled for next week and.
Where are they, sir?
Oh, gosh, all over.
All over.
Yeah. That newsletter that came out. Your
sir.
Bulletin.
Right. Yes.
I didn't realize they were nice enough. I got a copy of it today. They're nice enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That page there for me.
Yes, sir.
And a lot of your old shipmates have been in contact with me.
Yeah, you know, as far as the names, I don't remember all the names because it's been so long, you know.
Well, now, sir, are you going to go to the reunion in Missouri?
Yes, sir, Branson, I believe so.
Okay, well,
we tend to, anyway.
I'm going to try to also be in attendance.
Oh, that's good.
So I hope I have a chance to meet you in person.
Yes, sir, we sure.
And maybe if I can get a couple of you guys together, we'll do a collective memory.
There you go.
And who knows what kind of things we'll learn.
That's right. We do tour business here in Wilmington, and we've been to Branson about three times.
Okay, so you're pretty familiar with the area.
Yes, sir, Branson. We do ship tours and all these things, too.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. Well, yeah, I'll be in Berlin, Germany at a conference.
Are you?
The week before. So I think I'll be able to get back, and then that weekend.
Yeah.
I guess around the 16th of August, so I'm going to try to be able to get there, if my wife will let me.
That's good. That's good, yeah. But that's really good.
Yeah.
So when, friend of ours in the neighborhood here. She was a girl raised here. She's in Midland.
Okay.
She teaches school over there, and she's a Spanish major, too, so she's really, really up to the school business. She doesn't like Midland, though.
Yeah, well, yeah. she grew up in the East Coast, yeah, in Wilmington.
Well, she grew up really in Mexico.
Oh, okay.
Acapulco and Mexico City. So that's why she speaks Spanish so well.
Right. Well, that's a far cry from Midland or Odessa or Lubbock.
Yes, Odessa.
I can appreciate her. I can appreciate that.
Yes, sir. That's right. Well.
Okay. Well, I guess let's we'll go ahead and end it there. And again, you know, as I learn a little bit more, you know, maybe I'll give you another talk, or certainly I hope I have the chance to meet you in person.
Please do that.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Anything you want to ask, why, I'm here most all the time.
And next time I'll make sure I identify myself a little better.
Well, yeah, I really did not remember the guy's name from Myrtle Beach, stockbroker, but.
I don't blame you at all.
I didn't recognize your name when you. I really couldn't understand it too good, you know. So.
Okay. Well, I don't blame you at all.
Yes, sir.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Yes, sir. If you ever get the opportunity to come to Wilmington now, come over and see what they're doing here.
Oh, you bet.
UNCW.
I certainly will.
And I hope you good luck on this thing when you get into Washington.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I think it'll work out pretty well.
You're going to vacation your time there, or?
Well, no, it's going to be,
business.
I think it'll be, well, I grew up, I lived in Washington for a while, so I've been I've seen everything.
Mm-hmm.
I spent about 7 years there.
Yeah.
So I think it'll probably be mostly business and a little family.
Mm-hmm.
I have an uncle and aunt there.
That's good.
But, yeah, it'll be a trip with a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Get as much information as I can.
Yeah. Well, please call me again sometime and let me know what you're doing, maybe.
Oh, you bet. I will, I'll keep working on this.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, well, you have a good afternoon.
Yes, sir, and if you think of any other thing, call me.
You bet I will.
Yes, sir, you have a good day now.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that concludes the interview with James Richardson, USS Maynard. February 28th, and it is 1:40. Really, what I'm, as I explain a little bit, what I'm doing is I'm working on a book on the passage to freedom, and interested in talking with the participants of those ships who served during the operation. So I have a series of questions that I've been asking individuals. I know the Constellation had a special role as a support ship at Ventanang. So really, a lot of the questions I have probably aren't as pertinent to your own personal experiences. So they deal mostly with refugees.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few that I have. And really, the questions are designed to really elicit stories and memories and things of that nature. The first question I have really is sort of a basic background question in terms of, really I was interested when you joined the United States Navy and how you ended up on the Constellation in 1954.
Oh. Well, it's simple. I joined the Navy in 1951 in June and became a hospital corpsman. Was sent to Korea, attached to a Marine company, and rotated back to the States in 53, I believe it was, and was reassigned to the USS Constellation.
That was in 1953? Or thereabouts?
It had to be late 53, early 54.
Do you recall where the ship was when you first heard that you would be participating in this operation in Indochina?
No, we weren't even told.
You weren't even told at all?
No. No, but we were already in Korea.
they give you any indication of what your responsibilities would be?
No, they just told us that we would be taking on passengers.
Okay. Where did, now the Constellation ended up in Terang Bay or Da Nang.
Yes, down to Terang Bay.
And that's?
In the Philippines.
In,
Actually, it ended up in, it went from, French Indochina down to Terang Bay.
Yeah, right, which is, it's Da Nang now.
It's Da Nang.
Right.
That's where we picked them up.
Okay. And, what type of people did you pick up?
They were just civilian natives.
Okay. And did you, do you recall much about them? As a population, as a group?
I don't think I saw more than, 50, 60 of them. And they were just, you know, the normal, everyday-looking peasants.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did they stay on the ship for a prolonged period of time, or
just during the voyage? From, we were in. I thought it was Saigon.
Okay.
What's now Saigon?
And that was from Saigon up into Da Nang.
Yes.
Okay. Did you so? Actually, I hadn't heard about this group, so I'm curious. Were they then, was that their place of disembarkment?
Yes.
Okay. I'm curious, I don't know if you know what they, why it was that they were shipped up north.
Well, I don't know why they were shipped up there. They were, and I thought they were escaping something, because at that time, had just been kicked out of Dien Bien Phu.
Right, right.
And I thought that they were, well, everybody, I think, felt that they were just trying to escape the, well, whoever they were up north.
What, do you recall what the condition?
They looked in pretty good condition.
Did they?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have any chance to interact with them at all?
No, we were kept separate.
Was that by order, as it were?
Yes.
Or by regulation?
No, well, they had a certain stateroom, or certain wards, really, because it was a hospital ship.
Right.
And there were huge open wards in some of them. And that's where they stayed.
Oh, okay. So did you, as a corpsman, did you provide any medical treatment? No.
No.
I'm curious, actually, if you wouldn't mind, just give me a little bit of an idea of what your responsibilities on the ship were.
I was just a regular hospital corpsman assigned to a medical ward and performed the duties of, as directed.
Okay. Since I'm not terribly familiar with what types of duties you would normally do. I guess it really depended on the type of patients you had.
Yes, it depended, yeah.
But it would be anywhere from assisting doctors and and the nurse staff that was on?
Right.
A variety of topics or a variety of things.
Yeah, and I would just happen to be assigned to the contagious ward.
Okay.
And we didn't have too much work to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You ended up in Indochina. You didn't get any sort of preparation or briefings on different types of contagions that you might experience?
No. Well, we did, but we didn't run across any of them. You know, we had the usual liver flukes, some of the tropical diseases, but we didn't see any of those.
Okay. How about, there must have been some type of preparation for the crew to be in that port of call. And did they do inoculations, or?
Oh, well, we all had those before we went over.
Okay. Well, that even before you before you departed overseas?
Oh, sure. When I went to Korea, I had them all.
Okay.
To include Black Plague.
Okay. Yeah, which is actually has made a resurface in Vietnam recently.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the plague has.
Oh.
Which is kind of scary.
Yes.
Did you get a chance to have shore leave on in Da Nang?
Oh, yes.
Tell me about that. I'm curious as was. I saw Da Nang in 1999.
Well, Da Nang, I keep saying yes, but I thought we were in, at that time, it was Saigon.
Okay. On the Constellation?
Yes.
Well, I know that they were stationed.
I might have been wrong. It might have been Da Nang. I don't know.
Everything that I've seen has said, and people I've talked to, they said it was Da Nang, which was, they called it Terrain Bay at the time. That was the French name for it.
Okay, then I was in Terrain Bay.
Okay, okay.
Because I've got pictures, and written along the bottom of them in pen, I wrote Terrain.
Okay.
Terrain Bay, so yeah, that's where we were.
Yeah, that was the French name when the French were politely asked to leave. They changed it to the Vietnamese name of Da Nang. What was that like? What was the city like, and the people, and the experiences?
I always thought it was extremely dirty, but you know, there was dirt streets. No, the buildings were solid buildings.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I've got a picture in the book that I have of the local hospital there. Terrible conditions.
In what sense?
It was open air.
Mm.
An open air hospital with, 35 million flies around. And but the patients who were inside appeared to be treated quite well.
Okay. Did it seem like they were practicing what you would consider the proper techniques? And
oh, yeah, they were using, normal medical practices.
How about the sanitary conditions?
I thought it left a lot to be desired.
Yeah.
Well, you can't do much in the street.
That's right.
You know, because you got the constant dust blowing and all that. I don't think I'd care to be treated there.
Okay. Did you, were you able to interact with any of the Vietnamese?
No.
On shore?
No.
At all?
No.
Okay. What kind of, when you had your liberty, what sort of things were you able to do? I know they had sometimes planned beach parties.
Yeah, we did. We had, you could go swimming, organized sports from the ship. You know, the touch football, volleyball, that sort of thing.
But then when you went into the town itself, yeah.
We didn't go in on too often, but I have some, like I say, I have some pictures of the group of the nurses and the doctors that went ashore, and, they visited the local churches in the area.
Right, I guess, yeah, the orphanages.
Yeah, and the orphanages. Well. We did have a Christmas party for the orphans.
Oh, did you?
Aboard ship, yes.
Oh, aboard ship.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't heard about that yet.
Ah.
What do you recall about that? I'd be curious to know.
It was just that there was a bunch of school kids, or at least it looked like school kids, that come aboard ship and had a Christmas party for them. And, typical Christmas party for kids.
Yeah. Did you have presents for them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they had presents.
Now, how did, what kind of, I think this is kind of interesting.
They were well received.
Yeah.
They seemed, all the kids seemed to enjoy it. And they left. That was it.
One of the things I found interesting in what I've been reading is certainly the I think a unique relationship that, U.S. Navy sailors have with kids. We always seem to be drawn towards kids. When Is that something? Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Oh yes, yes, yes.
I mean, I've heard of stories where you know these guys will, on their payday, go out and buy candy at the ship stores and give the candy out or buy you know whatever the people need.
Yeah, they always try to keep the kids happy.
Yeah. This seems like the Christmas party is another good example of something like that.
Yeah. Especially in the orphanages.
Yeah. Now, how did you, how would you have communicated with the kids? Certainly none of them spoke English or hand gestures.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was,
pointing. An awful lot of pointing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was pretty effective, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with the younger ones.
Yeah.
Did you find, with what you were doing, that your role as a corpsman changed at all? During this period of time,
I don't think so.
Actually, you know what? Going back to since you when you had the kids aboard, what was their general? You said they're all pretty, I guess, excited about the party.
Yeah, they were all in good condition.
Okay. Yeah.
Physically? Oh yeah.
Yeah, health and appearance and emotionally.
They were all very clean and well behaved.
Was this a Catholic run, do you recall?
Yes.
Okay.
It was, yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was an orphanage there in, Da Nang or Turin Bay.
Okay. Well, that's neat. I'm surprised no one else has mentioned that to me. Because I imagine it was pretty much as a ship-wide event.
Have you talked to, do you know Mr. Luther? Actually, I think he's a doctor. Physicist, or...
Don't believe I've heard back from him, no.
He was on the Connie with us.
Okay.
And,
I have...
He was an avid photographer, too.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm trying to think. I was able to get, quite a number of names from, Ted Babinski.
Yeah. In fact, I was going to send Mr. Babinski some of the pictures about the Connie because he has set up reunions every year.
Every other year.
Every year, I think it is.
Was it Arthur Luther?
Arthur.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did send a letter out to him. He's out in Portland, Oregon now.
I thought he was on the West Coast.
Yeah. I have not received anything back from him. Yet.
As I recall, he was a very nice man.
Oh, well, I hope that I have a chance to talk to him as well.
An avid piano player.
Oh, yeah?
In the style of George Shearing.
Oh. Did you treat other types of patients while you were there in Turin Bay, do you recall? So it was essentially it was a pretty quiet time for you.
Yeah.
Well, do you recall how you spent your days?
Well, you stand in watch or on liberty.
Okay. I guess, and then just the daily maintenance
of
the areas.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've heard is that on the trips where the ships move the people from the north to the south, they would often stop in Turin Bay for R&R for a couple of days, but also there was a doctor, Tom Dooley.
Yes.
Did you ever get a chance to meet him?
No, I'd heard an awful lot about him.
Do you recall what you remember about him?
Well, I just heard about him that he was in the area, and that he was a doctor doing. Somebody said he was doing research and writing a book.
He was, yeah. He wrote a book called Deliver Us from Evil, which was about the operation from his perspective. But I know that he was also a Navy corpsman.
Oh, he was?
Yeah. He was aboard the I can't think what it was.
The Mercy?
No, it was Montague.
Oh.
But he was on land up in the camps in the north, helping people to get on the ships. But one of the things he did was he would get supplies from the Constellation.
That
wouldn't surprise me. And take them to the north. So I'm just trying to see if anyone had ever had a chance to talk to him,
nope.
Meet him, or know him.
I never met him. No.
Okay. Well, let's see. Now, I'm just going through some of these questions here. Did you, or any of your the colleagues, the medical colleagues, ever were involved in any of the births of children or
no,
things of that nature?
No, okay. Not that I know. No.
How about how did you and the crew treat the threat of the Viet Minh, of the communists? Was there any concern or any? It really wasn't a concern at all.
No.
Okay. How about the French Foreign Legion troops that were stationed in that area?
They were animals.
In what sense?
They were just like they were portrayed in the movies. To me, the
okay.
ones that I saw, you know, all I thought about was drinking and chasing women.
Okay. So they fit that. I forget the name of the movie. But sort of that idea of the French Foreign Legion. Were the crew given orders to sort of stay away from them, or?
Well, didn't need orders, just stayed away.
It was just a...
Look, you could watch them from a distance, and that was about it.
Yeah.
Because nobody wanted to get involved with them. They appeared to be, have mental problems. And they just didn't care what happened.
I guess it
just been through a pretty strenuous ordeal.
That's right.
Getting thrown out of Dien Bien Phu.
It makes sort of sense to stay away.
Yeah.
Unless you want trouble.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, were there any individuals that stood out to you in your mind's eye now that you remember pretty clearly?
In Indochina?
Yeah.
No, not really.
One of the questions I forgot to ask in the beginning was, when you did find out you were going to be in this area, or when you actually arrived in the area, did you know very much about what was going on in Indochina?
Yeah, just, you know, we got briefing letters saying, you know, what was happening in Indochina, that the French were getting expelled from the country, and that we were moving in to help
okay.
take some of the people out. And it was difficult because we had we were met, as I remember, by a chaplain, a Catholic priest. He spoke no English, and nobody aboard our ship spoke that brand of French.
Mm.
And the chaplains communicated Latin.
Okay.
The dead language, you know, it struck me as being odd. Dead language, and that was, that's how they communicated.
That was the only way to communicate. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be, how about after the operation was over?
Well,
did you follow what was going on in Vietnam?
No.
Having seen it?
I returned home, and I got separated from the military.
Okay. So it really never stuck on to you at all?
No, not really. I didn't have any interest in that part of the world afterwards.
Do you think, from what you know about the operation and the role of the Constellation, that in the end it was a successful venture, or were there some shortcomings?
No, I think it was quite successful.
And if given the chance, would you do it all over again?
I don't know. I'd have to think about that. But I tell you, Vietnam was built up better than Korea.
Yeah.
Come from Korea.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they were, because at that time they were still in Yeah.
Yeah.
Or at least north of the 38th parallel.
Right.
Saigon was, I mean, Seoul was devastated. It was, you know, some brick buildings, but they were just pounded.
Yeah, well, yeah, they'd seen a lot of war there in a short period of time. Well, there any sort of memories or stories or history about the operation that I haven't addressed? Things that you would want to make sure that were included in the overall history?
No, I don't even remember. It had a name. I'm sure it must have.
Actually, the original name was the Vietnamese name was Operation Exodus, and then the American version became Passage to Freedom.
No, I never heard either of those names.
Okay. Yeah, they do indeed, yeah.
That really wouldn't surprise me.
Well, one of the things I'll be doing this summer is I'll have an opportunity to go out to the Navy Yard and to the National Archives and get the deck logs. As I'm going through those for the Constellation, if I come across anything that I have a question about, can I give you another call back? And
sure.
See maybe if you know something about...
I can remember it.
Particular events or things.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I would say if after we hang up, if you remember something you wish you had mentioned to me,
yeah,
to please let me know so we can get it on the recording.
Sure, and I will include some pictures that I have.
Okay.
And I'll forward those to you. You can copy them and return them to me.
Yeah, I can go ahead and make digital copies and send them right back. That would be wonderful. I'd love to see, a little some more shots of what it was like at that time. That'd be wonderful.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Again,
I'm apologize for my mistake on the time there.
Ah, no problem.
I thank you for taking the time with me this afternoon.
You're more than welcome.
Okay. You have a good day.
And you also.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. That was Lewis McCluskey, March the 2nd, year 2001. He was at his home in Clifton,